A Man by Grant McFarlane.
In my younger and more vulnerable years, my father gave me some advice that I've been turning over in my mind ever since. Amongst the other learned things he would have told me on my 16th birthday, that which I recall was the quote, "A man's a man for a' that." He portentously repeated this line before I was allowed to go out and see my friends. "A man's a man for a' that, and a' that." "I know, Dad. I'll remember that. Thank you," I responded to his bear hug and heavy sighs. We stepped away from each other. He, looking at me, sanguine in the thought that he'd just given me the tools for an unlived life. I, looking at him, praying that he wasn't going to ruffle my hair and mess the look for my big night. I strutted from the house, telling myself that I was a man for a' that, as I'd, wrongly, thought Morag was about to find out. I had learned Robert Burns at school. Like all subjects taught by rote, it became a transient memory wrapped in the illusion of knowledge. And over the years, I misused this quote to excuse infidelities, justify my piety, exemplify my charity before eventually having an inkling as to why Dad told me to remember it. The realization came when preparing his eulogy, some 30 years since that quote. "A drab and dreicht Glasgow day" was in fitting with my faltering composition, and I strode out for a walk. The relentless daggers of horizontal rain turned into innocent drops after causing the pain. I strode forthright and underdressed, this pithy self-harm in vain. Am I a man for a' that, when I couldn't be the man to help my father at the end? I wondered. A few years after leaving home, I was studying to be an architect at Glasgow University. My dad would often come up and we'd take the same walk together. One time, the lecturers were on strike, so our quick lunchtime walk became the first and only all-day bonding session together. We strolled from the grubby shops of Great Western Road down through the majesty of Kelvinside Park and onwards to the many, many pubs in Byers Road. Each turn revealed another memory of he and my family's past. The peaks and troughs of his career I had long known, but for teenage reasons, I'd never really shared in. Here, in the area he grew up, left a physical path of Georgian, Victorian and post-war architecture he had variously once lived in. Like stepping stones through the financial ups and downs of his life before me, from being lauded for his success in bringing various shipbuilding contracts to the Clyde and living in wealthy enclaves, to be blamed when those contracts ended and causing the loss of many jobs and subsequently his own, to a less formidable tenement. He told me that neither the plaudits or insults were deserved, for he only ever done his best as honestly as he could, just as he had tried to do in the more modest circumstances of our upbringing. "A man's a man for a' that, after all," he would comment upon my incredulity. When attempting to write this eulogy, and in remembrance of all this, it came that I saw my father took his own path and suffered both in success and failure quietly, if at all. Indeed, his strength and pride were a higher rank than those false gods. He would talk as easily to the paupers as he would socialise with the highfalutin in his day. He did so without judgment, in the hope that others may act the same. "So, Dad, I eventually now understand your words you shared with me, and I am proud to be your man for a' that, and maybe live in a world that man to man, the world o'er, shall brothers be for a' that. Please raise your glasses to John."